I'm Brandon Isle, and I'm here with Richard Turley. He serves as the Managing Director of the Church Communication Department for The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. He's also worked before as the Managing Director of the Public Affairs Department, the Church Historical Department, the Family History Department, and the Combined Family and Church History Department. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for the invitation.
Now, you're here as a forum speaker at BYU-Idaho, and your topic today is Joseph Smith, Teenage Prophet. What a great topic.
Thank you. It's one that I developed over the years as I went out traveling with general authorities from country to country. I talked to missionaries, and as I was speaking to missionaries, I found that often when they go to conferences, they assume what I call the deacon's pose, elbows on knees, hands on cheeks, heads down. And so I thought, well, what could I say to them that might be of interest? So I began to take details from the life of the prophet Joseph Smith that I had learned that reflected his life when he was closer in age to these missionaries.
Right.
And as I began to talk about him in that way, the heads would come up, people would listen, and soon they'd begin to ask questions. And I realized, well, this is a topic that's of interest to people who are in the age of college students. So I thought I'd talk about it here today.
Yeah. Well, it's so interesting where in the church we talk a lot about the first vision, and then we kind of skip over any part of his life until he's praying again for forgiveness, and Moroni appears to him. And do you hit kind of some of those years in between?
I talk about everything from his birth up until the time that he has the vision of Moroni. Essentially, these very interesting formative teenage years. I think often we treat the prophet Joseph Smith as though he were a full-grown, very mature, seasoned 21st century adult when he had the first vision.
Right.
In fact, he was a 14-year-old farmer, and he had a very little formal education. He had a lot of concerns that are common to teenagers, concerns about his own personal salvation. He felt the weight of sin. He wanted to have that sin removed, and therefore he was looking to find a way to do that, and he just figured that the best way to do that is to find the right church. So his quest for personal forgiveness is what drove him to the Grove.
I work with the 14-year-olds in my ward, and sometimes I'll watch them, and they have their moments of, I mean, they're amazing, and then they have their moments of, yeah, they're teenage boys, right? And is there some of this balance in Joseph's life?
Absolutely. He was a 14-year-old teenage boy. He had many of the same desires and aspirations and feelings of 14-year-olds today, with some differences that related to his life as a farmer living primarily outdoors in the wilderness. And so when we think about him, we shouldn't judge him as though he were a fully mature 85-year-old general authority today. We should take him in his own time and context. So what I'm going to try to do today in 50 minutes is to help the audience understand what life was like for the 14 to 17-year-old Joseph Smith.
Yeah. And I think sometimes we forget that times were very different in those 1800s than they are now. You mentioned that, you know, we can't judge him by the 21st century person, but as an 1800s farm boy.
Exactly. And yet, there are many things about his life as a teenager that we'll each recognize from our lives as teenagers.
Yeah, that's great. Now, I teach a media literacy class, and they're mostly communication students, and they're very interested in learning more about you. So I'd like to ask you some questions about kind of your role as the managing director of the communication department and kind of how you got there, as you started as an English major, right,
at BYU? That's correct.
And kind of morph. So how did you get from there to where you're at today?
Well, my career has not been a straight line kind of career. I was an English major, before that an economics major. And I graduated and went to law school. And after law school, I joined a large Chicago firm that had a Salt Lake office and assumed that I would be there the rest of my life. Then I received a telephone call from a new member of the Quorum of the 12 Apostles, Elder Dallin H. Oakes. He invited me to lunch, and before I knew it, I was the managing director of the Church History Department. I did that for 10 years and then was invited to be the managing director of the Family History Department. When I got my letter of appointment, it said that I should run both departments until my position in church history was backfilled. That was not done, so I ran both departments essentially for 12 years.
And then that's a while.
For the first four of those years, they were two different departments. Then we merged them. And then after 8 years of very intense development in which both departments accelerated a great deal, we felt it was time to split them apart again. And at that point, I was asked to be the assistant church historian. I did that for 8 years. And so at the end of 30 years in church history, I was then invited to be the managing director of what was then the public affairs department. After I became managing director of that department, we merged it with another department and became what is currently the church communication department. So as you can see, that's not a straight line kind of career
No.
that you can plan. As we've been told by some of the senior church leaders, you do the best you can to prepare yourselves for life, and then you just take whatever direction the Lord points you in.
As you started getting these assignments and callings, how did you feel? Was this strange to you, or what kind of went through your head?
Several of these things were a surprise to me. Obviously, thinking that I was going to practice law my entire life and then being asked to move into history was a surprise, but it was a welcome surprise. I had always enjoyed church history. I'm kind of a polymath. I like lots of subjects, and one of those subjects was church history. So to recognize that I could retire from the law and spend the next years of my life focusing on church history was very interesting to me. I also loved family history, so when I was invited to do family history, that was quite natural for me. And during my 30 years in church history with 12 overlapping years in family history, the biggest surprise for me was probably the number of times that I ended up in media interviews of one sort or another. Ended up on national television, international television, did a lot of radio interviews, a lot of print media interviews. So the people in the public affairs department used to say to me, "We consider you a member of our department." And I always thought that that was figurative, not literal. So when I was invited to be the managing director of the public affairs department, it was a tremendous surprise, but I knew most of the senior people in that department anyway. And so they welcomed me, and it was a wonderful opportunity. And I just continue to look forward. I don't know what the next stages of my life will be. I'm at early retirement age, so who knows what the future will bring.
Yeah, you're just ready for anything.
That's right.
As a church historian, your fingerprints are on a lot of things that we use all the time in the church today, such as Family Search, indexing, the Joseph Smith papers, Saints, those new volumes that are coming out. What has that been like for you to kind of be involved in these very important things that have kind of ushered in a new era in the church of understanding and knowing our history?
I love to work with other good and talented people in developing new products and innovating. So when we have an opportunity to create something like Family Search to help advance the work of family history, or when we have the opportunity to create a set of volumes like Saints in order to bring church history to the masses, or create the Joseph Smith papers as a way of taking the writings of that great man and making them available to the world, you know, that's exciting work to me. My father is a emeritus professor. He was a professor of engineering and also taught entrepreneurship. So I have tech and entrepreneurship in my blood. So when I get a new assignment, I often look for ways to improve the way things have been done and try to figure out with other good people around me how to do them better.
Did you kind of come up with some of these ideas that are now what we know today, and were they kind of a stretch or kind of out there as you spoke with those above you to kind of approve these projects?
Sometimes they were my ideas personally. Sometimes they were the ideas of a group. I think that much of the best work that's done is done through a group. I know at universities in the academic realm, often people are sole practitioners or, you know, individual performers. I like to create teams of talented people who work collectively. So let's take Saints, for example. I came up with the idea and created the vision for Saints, but it probably took around 1,000 people to finally bring that first volume, Saints, out in its final form in all the languages that we have. So this is a team sport, if you want to
right.
refer to it as such.
Yeah, there's so much investigation and research involved in something like Saints. Just those narrative stories are amazing, and a lot of them we've never heard before in church curriculum.
Well, our hope was that the four volumes of Saints would cause all ships to rise. You know, typically, there have been a small number of members of the church who have been interested in learning the details of the church's history, and the great masses have not, in part because they've felt that history is not interesting. So the goal of Saints, the vision behind Saints, was to create a series of books, four volumes, that would be extraordinarily accurate from a historical perspective, that would tackle the difficult subjects of the church's past as well as the wonderful subjects that I think dominate the church's past, mm-hmm. and put all of that into a narrative that would read like a novel. So it would read as though it were a novel, but in fact it would be nonfiction. Trying to put all of that together is a tall order, but I think we had a wonderful team of people who made it work.
Yeah, and we're excited to keep reading as the volumes come out.
Thank you. Volume 2 will be out in February.
Awesome. I know some of the chapters are being introduced each month leading up to that.
Yes, we have 3 chapters out already.
Yeah, that's great. One of the questions that my students had come up with yesterday, they wanted to know how, as you've learned more church history, how has that strengthened your testimony, especially as you've maybe learned some of the more difficult things. I know you have a book about the Mountain Meadows Massacre and some other sticky subjects. How has that shaped your testimony?
I often analogize church history to being a large jigsaw puzzle. And if you have just a few pieces of that jigsaw puzzle and you hold them very close to your eyes, you get a very distorted view of reality, the way things are. So for me, church history has been a quest for seeing the big picture. And seeing the big picture means gathering all of the pieces and putting them up on the wall one at a time, fitting them in their proper place. And when you get all the pieces in place, you have a tremendously rich, textured view of the world. And certainly there are some things in that picture that are disheartening, some that are very tragic, some that are downright terrible. But as a totality, as a whole, when you look at the picture as a whole, it's an extraordinarily beautiful picture. So I think that it's important for people to know the truth about church history. Truth is defined in the Doctrine and Covenants as a knowledge of things as they are, as they were, and as they are to come. So if you really want to understand a subject, including the history of the church, you have to see how the church is today, but you also have to see how it was going clear back to the beginning. And then you have to be willing to accept how it's going to be in the future as things continue to change. We're led by a very strong and vibrant 95-year-old prophet, seer, and revelator. And I think one of the hallmarks of his administration has been the tremendous amount of forward progress and change that we've seen during his administration.
Yeah, and not long yet.
And it's been short, but he's very strong and vibrant and receiving direction from the Lord all the time.
For those who go to your forum today, what do you hope they take away from what you speak about?
I hope they will have a better understanding of the prophet Joseph Smith, and with that understanding, a better empathy for who he was as an individual and a better understanding of what it meant to be a teenage prophet.
Richard Turley, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.